happy Thanksgiving Monday to you and yours. Welcome to Baseball Central. I am not Jeff Blair. Scott MacArthur sitting in. I assume he's off with family today.
I think he's at the cottage, I would assume.
At the cottage?
I would assume. I think he was, my wife showed me a tweet of him smoking a cigar and holding up a drink and, you know, look at me kind of thing.
What's his poison? Is he?
I'm not sure.
I would assume,
yeah, you know, that dipping the end of your cigar in it and smoking it that way. I'm assuming that's the kind of thing he rolls. So, you know, hey, listen, it's Thanksgiving. I hope everybody's having a great one and enjoying their families. And Jeff deserved it. So it's good for him to try and get away.
You dropped a bit of a bomb on me 15 minutes ago. You're not a turkey guy. Or is it more the family that isn't turkey people?
I don't know. I think you got to be in the mood for it. And sometimes, you know, most of the time, I'm not really in the mood for turkey.
Yeah. I didn't like,
to each his own.
I didn't like turkey as a kid. Now I can't get enough of it.
Really?
Cranberry sauce, stuffing, gravy. I don't need to eat for 2 days after a Thanksgiving dinner. We had ours as a family on Saturday night.
Very nice.
So I'm still, that's still
yeah,
based in that.
Well, good.
Yeah. So I haven't eaten in like a day and a half, Kev. So
that's all right.
I'm totally wired. I got my coffee. I'm good to go.
Very nice. Very nice.
Do you want to start happy or do you want to start, with cranky Scott?
Seeing as how I picked the Yankees to win the World Series, let's start there on Friday night. How about we start there?
All right. So Friday night, explain to me, and I talked about this on Leadoff this morning here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I said, if that game was game 86 out of 162, I wouldn't have stayed with it for more than two or three innings. And I understand game 86 out of 162 is not going to be managed and schemed the way that that game five was. But if you wanted a poster, an example of how baseball is played, especially at its most crucial moments in this day and age, Kev, it's effectively this. Have a pitcher who throws 100 or a little more than 100 and have a hitter stand in there and cross his fingers. And the team that's going to win is the team that has a guy in the batter's box who one more time than the other team runs into 100. And that's what we saw. We got three solo home runs. Mm-hmm. Two happened to be hit by Tampa Bay. One happened to be hit by the Yankees. 2-1 final score. Boom. There was hardly much contact of consequence outside of those three home runs and not a lot of action.
Okay, the first question I would have is why all of a sudden did that start to tick you off? Because, you would think you'd be used to seeing that. Is it because the Yankees had their full lineup and they'd only gotten one run? Would that have something to do with it? Or is, you know, you were expecting that team to move on instead of the Rays moving on?
Well,
all of a sudden did it, you know?
I was rooting for the Yankees. I'm not going to lie. And I don't want to hijack this full hour and take it away from you because I got a whole thing on the Rays we could get into. I don't think the Rays being good is good for this sport.
Hmm.
I just don't. I'm opposed to salary suppression and manipulation and all that stuff, and I think that they're experts in that field. So yeah. I wanted, on principle, forget the fact that my parents grew up Yankees fans before the Blue Jays existed, and we've got a little Yankees blood in our family. I wanted the Yankees to win on principle. I simply prefer them as a group.
I think for Major League Baseball, you would rather have had the Yankees Astros instead of the Rays Astros. I'll give you that, but you got to tip your hat a little bit to the Rays, the way they do it. You know, it's pitching first, defense, and then somebody get a hit. That's basically the way they're rolling, right? It's not the other way around. It's not, you know, go up, take as many big hacks as you possibly can. Hopefully you run into one. No, it's, you know, stay within yourself, try and keep your swing as level as possible with hitters that matter. You know, there's some guys in there that have some uppercut in their swing, but, you know, you can still see the Rays with the L screens all lined up in the infield trying to hit the ball over the L screens so you don't hit the ball on the ground in spring training. You can still see that, but most of those guys, you know, the Mike Brosso at bat with Chapman at the end of the game, that's a big deal because you get a 101 over the head, and then you get a guy that has a 10-pitch at bat and hits a 101-mile-an-hour fastball over the fence, and he made an adjustment in that at bat. You know, the big leg kick to start, at the end he's stride separating, eliminating the lower half, just trying to throw barrel at baseball. It's, you know, this is not going to work. I have to change something. He's throwing really hard, and he's somewhat locating it. So you're seeing, you know, that – that mind thing threw it at bat, and then what happened to him before with the 101 over the head. So that was kind of cool. And then the top of the ninth inning, you seen Giancarlo Stanton come up, leading off the inning, getting a 2-0 count, take three strikes, and strikes out. So you go from one of the best at-bats you've ever seen to one of the worst at-bats you've ever seen to a guy that's had a really good playoff series. Like, you know, he's been one of their biggest hitters in the playoffs to go up and take three strikes leading off an inning after you're down a run. Just would make you want to take your head off and punt it if you're a Yankees fan. Just think of what are you looking for? Like, are you just keyholing that much, or are you trying to walk? So it's one of those things of, you know, you went from a high of a baseball fan to a low because you wanted to see that. I'm with you. I picked the Yankees to win the World Series. I'm not going to lie. You know, the host of this show, you know, picks on me a lot about the Rays. It's the Rays way, you know, lift the Rays up. These kind of things.
Because he knows it drives you nuts. So you got an ally in me on that.
And they do. Well, you got to tip your hats to them. They play the game the right way. And normally, for the most part, you have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves, and they always have the great pitching. So that's one of the things. But, you know, starting a Friday off like that, and then Saturday my Hokies got ran all over by the Tar Heels, you know, and just saying the Tar Heels are in the top five in college football just doesn't sound right, does it?
That sounds like a COVID aberration.
It really does. And then Sunday you're watching the Hazel's Chiefs loss, which is a big deal. Dak Prescott, I'm watching that football game, and then he has his ankle turned inside out. And, you know, I'm dry heaving watching football, so it didn't get off to a good start. And then today, Joe Morgan – We got the call that, you know, the information that he had passed away. So it's been a Friday to Sunday, you know, but it is Thanksgiving, and we can move on, hopefully have a good day the rest of the day. But it's had its ups and downs. It's 2020. How many people raise their hand who can't wait to get rid of 2020 because it hasn't been it?
Yeah, no, it hasn't been it at all. Not, and no. And let's cross our fingers that 2021 is going to be the year of
Let's
the bounce
so.
Back.
Well, you can't, my thinking is it can't go anywhere but up.
Well, let's hope.
Let's
hope 100%. And let's hope that these teams can get to spring training in the middle of February and have their 6 weeks, and then we can get into a regular season. And would it be nice if both Canada and the United States are in a position come the start of April that the Blue Jays can get clearance to be up here? Who knows if...
Yeah.
There's 5,000 fans, 10,000 fans, 20,000 fans.
Some's better than none.
And you know what? Even nobody in the seats playing in Toronto is better than nobody in the seats playing elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what we'll wish for. And so we go back on the Rays beating the Yankees. They're already a game up on the Houston Astros. And didn't they just win by the same score? 2-1.
Yeah.
And lock it down. And... this is unlike any other playoff we've seen, Kevin, and probably unlike any other playoff we'll see again, because there are no days off. And so Kevin Cash, who ran his horses in Game 5 and then had the day off, was trying to, after Snell went 5 innings, piece that thing together without using all of his big arms.
And still won.
If this is going to be a deep series...
they're going to need him.
You have to apportion it all out.
Sure.
Probably fair. We didn't see Fairbanks, for example.
Nick Anderson, you didn't
we
see.
We didn't see Nick Anderson. And what did he do? 2 1/3 or something in Game 5.
Pitches so all the time.
They probably wanted to give him the extra day because he worked so much in Game 5. And there's our old pal Loopy doing what...
well, what Loopy does.
What Loopy does. Just...
did you see Kevin Cash's face when he hit that batter?
Well, what could Kevin Cash have expected? How many times have we seen Loopy...
well, not that.
How many times have we seen Loopy... drill a guy in the ass, missing arm side.
I can tell you exactly what he was thinking. The one reason why I put him on the roster was to get one guy out for me in a big spot, and he couldn't do that. That's the one reason. That's why you saw the look on his face, and, you know, he was really thinking his, you know, rethinking what he had decided on doing. So, again, that's the thing, is they didn't use their horses. Their starting pitcher wasn't great. You know, he battled through the whole thing. Fastball command, the breaking ball wasn't there. The slider was okay. He used more changeups than you're normally seeing. You know, arm speed wasn't there, all that stuff. What does that say about the Astros? Like, it's you know, were they trying too hard because of what's happened in the past? That's what I said. Is this what we're going to continue to see throughout this playoff series? Because if it's 2-1, It's not going to be the easiest of watches. It's really not. You need some high-scoring games. You need the Astros' top three or four hitters to catch fire. You need Brandon Lau to do something. Like, you know, stop gliding one time at the plate. Make an adjustment. Like, yeah, I know Gerrit Cole put a lot of people in some funks, but it's one of those times where, you know, fastball's up. Occasionally, if you're left-handed, trying to lay off one. Don't continue to do the same thing over and over again. So that's going to be one thing. I think that's why you're seeing the low-scoring games from the Rays, is because Brandon's not doing anything. Like, he's consistently having poor at-bats, and when you do that, it makes everybody else have to do more, and that's usually not the Rays' way, right? It's sort of the fill-in-the-blank. You don't do it, you pass the baton, I sort of do it. It's not one guy carrying the team all the time. Now, that's sort of the way it is. So, you know, what's this series going to look like? I think that's the question. And how does Dusty Baker piece it together in their bullpen? Can he do enough? Can they score enough runs? Can the bullpen do enough to keep the Rays from not scoring runs?
That's the ex-Astro Charlie Morton in game two for Tampa Bay, and Lance McCullers Jr. is going to get the ball at least to start for Houston. And, I mean, there's Randy Arozarena again.
Yeah, flat swing. Like, yeah, look, is he this good? Probably not. Well, he's a very hot hitter. He does have a very, very flat swing. You don't know a ton about him, but he's killing mistakes.
Well, and that's what you know this, Kevin. There are teams that if they move on from a guy, you wonder what it is they know. The St. Louis Cardinals are one of those teams. If Randy Arozarena was showing them signs that he would be what he's become for the Rays this year, there's no way they would have traded him. I always use the Randall Grichuk example. Right? The St. Louis Cardinals moved on from Randall Grichuk. They saw the lack of on-base percentage. They saw a decent defender at a corner outfield spot, but nothing that made you say, wow. And they had all their options, right, at the time. So they moved on from Randall Grichuk. It just makes me wonder, is Arozarena going to be this latest breakout star? This Rays team, one of the ways that they're so successful is that they draft and develop well, yes, but they also go out and they hit these massive home runs in these trades.
Yeah.
Austin Meadows hit a home run the other night. Well, he was either more celebrated or less celebrated. I would say less celebrated component of the deal with the Pirates. Yeah. Chris Archer to Pittsburgh for Austin Meadows. Oh, and the 6'8" fireballer, Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
That is a declining asset at the time that the Rays trade him.
Yeah.
And he's on a controllable contract because they inked him early in his career, bought out the Arbiers, bought out a year of free agency. Mm-hmm. And they peddle him to Pittsburgh, who were coming out of their window. They trade a pretty good outfielder and a great young arm for Chris Archer. I wonder if the St. Louis Cardinals are going to regret this Arozarena thing, or if it's too small a sample size at this point to know.
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. You have to figure, if you're St. Louis Cardinals, you're thinking, man, why couldn't we seen that while he's here? He was here. We could fill him in a position, hit him in the middle of the order in the lineup. Maybe he could drive in some big runs. Maybe we would have moved on in the playoffs. These kind of things, to have a guy like that that can hit a fastball, that can hit velo, that can lay off a breaking ball, that can carry your team offensively for 2 weeks. That's every lineup needs that, right? The Blue Jays need that occasionally, a guy that can do that. Look, it's, you know, you got to be careful on, you all in on a guy that you don't really know a ton about. And that's the league too. You know, 162 game season. They're going to find out if he can consistently hit a breaking ball, right? You're going to get more breaking balls than you are in fastball counts. You're not going to get a fastball when you're expecting to get a fastball up and away like he did last night. Those kind of things. You're going to get secondary pitches instead of those. That's adjustments. Is he capable of making adjustments? I don't know that. I would assume nobody, even the Rays, don't know that because they've really never seen him do it. So it's just seems to be the Rays way. I think that's the easiest way for everybody. I always say it is, well, just send him to the Rays. The Rays will figure it out. If he can't throw a strike and he's throwing 93 miles an hour, send him to the Rays. They'll add 4 more miles an hour to the fastball, and he's locating down and away. Why is that? You know, is it something they have, or that they're doing better than everybody else? I'm not sure of that. Yeah, everybody I talk to, they seem to think that they have confidence in their players more than other organizations do. Like, it is, here it is, go show us you can do it. And maybe that's just the most of it. I know when I was a player and I was in Milwaukee and I was struggling at the big league level, I would have loved a guy just to walk up that mattered with that organization and just said, you know what, Kev, I get it. You're struggling. Baseball's hard. Go out there, just run out there, and we're going to let you figure it out for the next 2 years. You know, sort of like Danny Jansen. Blue Jays are letting him hit a buck 70. Now, I'm not saying a buck 70 is okay, and I'm not saying I could have done that, but I'm saying it's kind of nice for an organization just to say, you know what? We know you have talent. We can see the talent, but we're going to have to let you ache and pain through some things that, you know, may not be the easiest of watches. Go out there and get it done. And that just may be what Tampa Bay does better than anybody else.
And handle the pitching staff, and then whatever else comes with your offense is here's the thing with the Rays too, Kevin. You go down this list. Brasso, I'm going down last night's lineup. Brasso, Rosarena, Lau, Diaz, Wendell came in later, Renfro, Adames, Margot, Kiermaier, Zunino. We could sit here and do this show. I could fill in for Jeff Blair and sit with you someday 3 years from now. And if there are two guys in that lineup on that team in 3 years, I'll be surprised. That's how they rule. I think if you're a young ball player, there's probably no better organization for which to play than Tampa Bay. They set you up for success, and they are going to move you on the moment you become too expensive for them. And they'll handpick their guys and give them long-term contracts and probably sign them before they have to, because if you get too expensive in arbitration, they're going to have to move on from you earlier than they would like. So they'll give you the 7 or the 8 year deal, buy out a year of free agency or two, and maybe total it up in the $40, $50 million range, heavily backloaded to reflect your arbitration number as the years go on and maybe what you'd get in your first or second year of free agency. That's how they roll. But as a young player, that would be, outside of the crappy stadium and the silly turf, that would be the place to play, because you can turn it into a payday somewhere else.
Yeah, but it is not a fun watch. You know, great pitching, you know, solid defense, and an occasional big hit. That's not the easiest of watches. Like you're watching that game last night going, somebody get a big hit. Like, it's like the when who came up with first and second for the Astros? I think it was Kyle Tucker.
Yes.
Who came up and the Rays put the shortstop exactly in the spot where he hit a línea where the shortstop Adames could run over and tag second. And then it's first base with two outs. And you had Blake Snell on the ropes. It's just little things that the Rays do defensively with the shift, because they invented the shift. That's basically why the game has slowed down and everybody's trying to hit homers, is because the Rays invented the shift. And now if you're a hitter and you got to the big leagues doing it a certain way, and I have six people and I'm a left-handed hitter and you're a pull hitter, six people like Justin Smoak, everybody's on the right side. I got to the big leagues doing it this way. Why am I going to change? I made money doing it. So what do? I just try and get the barrel out in front a little bit more with a little bit of loft in it, get the ball in the air, try and hit more home runs that way. I'm not changing anything other than that. You always see the same thing over and over again. Well, why don't they hit it where the defense ain't? Because that's not how they got to the big leagues. Just doesn't work that way. So it's just little things of the Rays do things just a little bit quicker than everybody else. It's just when you watch them play and the defender standing where you would think a defender's not supposed to be standing, and the guy hits a line drive right to him.
And Kev, we're watching these games on TV. So we get the center field camera showing the pitcher and the hitter and the catcher and the umpire. We don't see the defensive alignment every pitch. There was many occasions in the two-game series with the Blue Jays. Bo Bichette comes to mind in game two. Line drive right back, whizzes past the pitcher's ear.
Yeah.
And you think it's going up the middle for a base hit because you're like me. You grew up, well, you played, but you also grew up in the 80s watching baseball.
Yeah.
A ball 100 miles an hour plus off the bat, straight back up the middle, almost catching the pitcher, is going up the middle for a single.
Yeah.
And every time Willie bleeping Adames
is standing right there. Yeah. Yeah, it is very frustrating because you're always taught as a hitter when you're growing up, stay inside the ball, hit it back where it's pitched, that kind of thing. And when the whoever's standing there, could be the second baseman, could be the shortstop, standing right behind the second base bag, right behind the pitcher's ear, like you just mentioned, and you hit a line drive right to him, then your next at bat, what are you going to try and do? not hit it there. So you're going to do something different. Bats are going to take longer because you're taking pitches longer. Now you're trying to get the ball in the air. So it's, that's what I said. It is just, that's why it's a very frustrating kind of game to watch with the Rays, is they do things analytically a little bit quicker than everybody else does with whatever they're doing, making up their lineup, the way they use their bullpen.
Well, they created the opener more or less.
They exactly did. When they use their starting pitchers, all of these things. But it's sometimes not an easy watch. It's really not, and I'm with you. Like you mentioned that before the show started, that the Rays and the Astros is not going to be a fun series because it is going to be that you're standing where you shouldn't be standing.
Right. Well, and Dan Shulman's going to join us in a few minutes, and we can pick up on this topic and more. At some point, Kevin, because I'm a bit of a nerd for these things, and I, not that it's my money, but I have a tendency to obsess over it a little bit because I really want to make sure that the players are getting full value, their full worth. Tampa Bay has created some things, and this is really sports-wide now, but there are baseball-specific examples, the opener. You know, starting pitchers aren't going to get the wins, right, that they used to, and that's been on the decline the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
But they have created the method of plausible deniability, which is to say that you can argue it doesn't make sense for any pitcher on your roster to face a lineup more than two times through, right?
Yeah.
Like, look at the OPS against of pitchers third time through. Unless you're an absolute ace, most of the time, twice, 18 hitters, that's enough.
Yep.
So it's actually functional to the sport, but these things, and the reason for plausible deniability, my argument is, they also will serve to suppress salaries. Because now you go to arbitration and you're a so-called starting pitcher and you're averaging 12 outs an appearance.
Yeah.
You're throwing 3 1/3, 3 2/3, 4 1/3, like somewhere in there. They're going to say, well, you're not worth $4 million in year one of arbitration, mm-hmm. $8 million in year two, $12 million in year three, whatever it would be. So it's actually functional to the sport, but at the same time, it suppresses salaries. And where the sport needs to get to is it needs to stop obsessing over arbitration awards for wins and saves and some of these archaic stats.
So you're saying it's going to be hard to figure out how you pay a Nick Anderson that we've seen in the third inning and we've seen close 6 or 7 games.
The guys who used to get screwed in arbitration were the high-leverage, late-game, non-closer relievers.
Yeah.
They're as important to the sport now as anybody else on the field.
Yeah, you can lose the game in the fifth inning kind of thing, right?
So, I don't know. It's a constant cat and mouse game, and
can't blame the Rays. You know that this is the payroll they're dealing with. We will take people that you don't want and turn them into what you're watching on TV.
Right.
We're playing and you're not. That's basically what they're saying.
The Rays are the mouse. The sport is the cat, and we'll see if the cat's ever able to catch up to the mouse. Coming up on the other side, it's Scott MacArthur for Jeff Blair on Baseball Central. Kevin Barker is here. Happy Thanksgiving to you. The great Dan Shulman from Bristol, Connecticut, where remotely. He is calling the ALCS. Tampa Bay has a 1-0 series lead. They'll play game 2 at 4 o'clock this afternoon on Sportsnet against Houston. And then the Dodgers and Atlanta open up from Arlington, Texas, later on tonight, also on Sportsnet. We'll tee the series up with Dan Shulman, and we'll talk about the great Joe Morgan, the big red machine second baseman who passed away today. Dan worked with him often in the broadcast booth and has some great stories. All of that next with Dan Shulman on Baseball Central. Scott MacArthur for Jeff Blair. Kevin Barker is here. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll go to a beautiful, lovely Bristol, Connecticut, right off the hop.
Very nice.
He is helping to call the American League Championship Series between the Houston Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays. Game 2 goes this afternoon at 4 o'clock in a game you can watch on Sportsnet. Dan Shulman is with us. Good afternoon, sir. And I almost said good morning. So,
your body clock's a little out of whack, I guess. Afternoon. Happy Thanksgiving, boy.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Before we get into some of the goings on the field, Dan, I caught your tweets, and I honestly I didn't know that you knew Joe Morgan as well as you seemed to. You worked with him a lot, I presume, on the radio side. The great second baseman for the Big Red Machine passing away today at the age of 77. Tell us a little bit about the person, Joe Morgan?
Well, it was actually on TV. It was back in the day. So okay. I've been at ESPN since 1995, and I started off doing Wednesday games. So John Miller, Joe Morgan did the Sunday game. I became the Wednesday guy. Joe would also do some Wednesdays a lot of times when they were on the West Coast because he lived out on the West Coast. And then later on, before I took over on Sunday nights, I would fill in 2-3 times a year for John Miller and do games. And Joe was there, so I would do Sunday nights with Joe. So, I don't want to overstate it, but I might have done 40, 50 games with him, maybe more, I don't know, over the course of my time with ESPN. And, it's funny. I was maybe 30 the first time I worked with him, and he was Joe Morgan, right? Like it's a little bit nerve wracking at the beginning, you know, especially when you work with any of these guys who you grew up watching play, but especially when you work with a Hall of Famer. I'm trying to remember who the first couple of people I worked with at ESPN were, and I can't off the top of my head. One thing that made it easy for me actually is Buck. It was Buck a lot of times. So that helped transition me into ESPN. But then when you the schedule comes out the next week and you're going to Seattle to do a game with Joe Morgan, that's like, whoa, that's one of those, how did I get here moments. Joe was a fascinating guy. In many ways, like a savant about how the game was played, like just about watching little things about, the transfer of the ball or backing up that play or the cutoff man. He was, a fiery guy at times. He was very opinionated. Believed in what he believed in, stubborn about a lot of things, but he treated me great. And again, I was just some guy, some kid, really, relatively speaking, who showed up on the schedule and all of a sudden I'm doing a game with him. And he couldn't have been nicer to me. He really couldn't have been. I enjoyed working with him. Working with every analyst is a very different experience. You're in there for 3.5 hours without a script, getting to know people. And I really enjoyed my time working with Joe. It was terrific.
Dan, did you ever have conversations with him about how the game's changed? About the play at second, the new rules. And did you ever have conversations about his feelings on how the game's changed?
Kevin, he left ESPN after 2010. I started on Sunday nights on 2011, and that's when John and Joe, their time was done, and I only saw him sparingly after that. And I'm trying to think today when the last time I saw him was. I think I was on a trip with my son. We go see 2-3 ballparks every year, and this was maybe 2013 or 14, and we were in Cincinnati, and coincidentally he was there because they were unveiling a statue for him like the next day. And I have some, friends with the Reds, and I said, do you mind if I bring my kid down on the field, which I never do, but I'm telling you, I did at that time. And Joe was down on the field. So, I talked to Joe that day, and that was maybe, 7 years ago. So I don't know if I had seen him since. I will tell you, and Scotty mentioned, so if you saw the tweet, I'll tell you my best Joe Morgan story. I'm doing a game with Joe at Fenway Park. Our producer is a great friend of mine, Jay Cutlow, who lives in California and is a neighbor and friend of Fred Lynn, the former Boston Red Sox star. Fred Lynn happened to be at Fenway that night as an ambassador, like former players come back and that sort of thing. So Jay knew Fred, and Fred knew Joe, and I knew Jay, and I'm working with Joe. And after the game, long story short, the four of us end up literally just in the hotel bar at the Marriott Copley in Boston. Mm-hmm. And Joe and Fred are going to reminisce about the 1975 World Series, maybe the greatest World Series ever played, right? And Jay and I are there. We don't say a word for 2 hours. Our jaws are on the table listening to the 1975 National League MVP, Joe Morgan, and the 1975 American League MVP, Fred Lynn, talk about the greatest World Series ever played. You want to talk about a kid in a candy store, and the only sad part of the story is, this is before you could just take out your phone and record stuff. This is like 20 years ago, and nobody had a tape recorder with them. And it's, I didn't record any of it. But I got to tell you, it's as good a night as I've ever had in my professional life, sitting there listening to those two guys talk baseball.
Where do you think he ranks as greatest players ever?
Well, I think on the second baseman list, Rogers Hornsby was an unbelievable player. But I don't know that I'm an expert on this kind of stuff, but I know a lot of people who think Joe Morgan was the second best second baseman ever. And that's pretty high praise. And, two MVPs. It's funny, and I'm going to use the word only in air quotes here. He only hit 271 for his career. But he walked. Think about this for a sec, guys, because you both love the game.
Yeah.
He walked 850 times more than he struck out in his career.
Wow.
850. Okay. Go on Baseball Reference. Look at his MVP years, because I looked him up today. I wouldn't have known this otherwise. But he hit it well over 300 both years, had some power. But like one year, he walked like 112 times and stole 67 bases and was caught 9 times. Plus, he hit over 300. Plus, he had some power. Plus, he could play the heck out of second base. So, is he a top 20 player all time? I don't know. But he is, you know how we use the phrase, there are Hall of Famers and then there are inner circle Hall of Famers. In my mind, he's an inner circle Hall of Famer. Like, he is a special Hall of Famer. And you know, not many guys won 2 MVPs and 2 World Series. And I'll tell you now, I teach an interview, so I'm doing the games for ESPN Radio for Houston, Tampa Bay, and we have a Zoom call with the managers before the game. So we had a Zoom with Dusty Baker like an hour and a half ago. And at the end of the Zoom, we had pre-cleared, can I do a 2-minute radio interview with Dusty? And he said, sure. And I said, so when everybody else got off the call but me and Dusty, I said, is it okay if we just talk about Joe, not the game? And he said, I would love to do that, because he was close with Joe. And he talks about how Joe was one of the guys who helped him when he was a rookie in the big leagues. You know, it's a different time, right? Like, Dusty came up in the late 60s. In some ways it was a different time, and in some ways, sadly, it's not as different as we want it to be. But Dusty talked a lot about how Joe Morgan helped him and Ralph Garr navigate their way through their early years in the big leagues. And they would teach them what they needed to be taught, and they would have them over for dinner, and they would be there at the other end of a phone call if the younger guys needed help. And you know, that, like, that's Dusty Baker talking, right? And you know, Dusty's been in the game forever and looked up to Joe Morgan, and we had a great, you know, 2.5-minute radio interview about Joe Morgan. Yeah. That's going to air today. So it was something.
Yeah, real quick before we let you go about that, do you have any idea why he started doing the arm flap?
No, I don't. I wish I did. That's
Me
a great
too.
Question. Because I'm sure you imitated it growing up as a kid.
I did.
Everybody did, right? It didn't matter if you were a big leaguer like you or a guy like me playing wall ball with my friends off the school wall. And I was a right-handed batter, so I did it with my right elbow, right? You just did it with your back elbow.
Yeah.
And every kid in the 70s and 80s did it. And I would guess, much like Gary Sheffield, that it was just a bit of a timing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, Kevin, he was so quick, right?
Sure.
I think maybe it was just something to keep him from being still and getting tight for too long because he was so quick. But it was a violent thing. It wasn't like just a little casual thing, right? It was a forceful thing would be a better word. But I've never seen any other hitter come close to that. Sheffield would be the closest, I guess. Those are the only two guys I can think of.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Morgan's stats up on Baseball Reference. He played for 22 years, almost 2,650 games, and he retired with a .392 on base percentage, to your point about all the walks.
Yeah.
And he had 100 wins above replacement.
Can I tell you a really quick funny story? So I'll tell you this. When I was working with Joe near the end of his career, and Joe wasn't so big on the new analytics numbers and stuff like that, right? and then somebody said to him, hey, Joe, but, you know, because you walk so much, like, WAR loves you. Like, your WAR is unbelievable. And Joe's like, okay. I think I'm good with WAR now. You
know? Oh, there you go. All of a sudden, and then he's spitting out WAR stats and all
as
the
peripherals. As long as you're great at it, that's all that matters.
Dan, Kevin and I, off the top of the show, and I'm still living in the past, man, way, way back to, Friday night, game 5 between the Rays and the Yanks. And it played out in a not dissimilar fashion. Game 1 last night, the Rays get 5 herky-jerky innings out of Blake Snell, and then they piece it together with their bullpen. Our old buddy Aaron Loop tried to make it interesting, but outside of that, they got a lot of fireballers, do the Tampa Bay Rays. Is it, and I know Atlanta, Los Angeles will probably play out differently because they tend to let their starters go deeper because those starters are capable of doing it. Is it great for the sport when it is reduced to effectively here hitter, stand in the box, and if you can catch up to 100, well, something good may happen. Right. You know what I mean? Like it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It was effectively Tampa Bay had one hitter catch up to high velocity, one more hitter than the Yankees on Friday night. And that was the difference in the game. And there wasn't much else that happened.
Yeah. No, my answer is no. And I can appreciate, you know, the game has changed. The velocity is better than it's ever been. And starting pitchers don't go as deep anymore, and relievers are more important. And I understand it's all based in math. It's analytics. It's probability. I understand it all. And it can be smarter, but it to some can be not as appealing. And, I try to see both sides of it. And the analogy I always use is the car I drive now is objectively a much better car than the car that I drove when I was 19 years old. But you know what? There was something about that first car that I liked better. It really meant something to me. So something can be smarter and it can be better, but it's fair for different people to have different points of view. Like for the Tampa Bay Rays to win game 5 against the Yankees, they did it probably the best way they could do it. And listen, there were extenuating circumstances, right? Tyler Glasnow was on 2 days rest, so he wasn't going to go that far. But in the old days, every team would have had a starting pitcher who would have started that game, and they would have gone as deep as they can. But it is smarter now to bring in Fairbanks and Castillo and Anderson, throwing 96 to 100, let everybody see them once, and then go from there. You know, then there's the fine line between that and, you know, how the Blue Jays played it in their game and what the Yankees tried to do in their game with Davey Garcia. And, you know, black and white's not always as black and white as it seems to be. But this is just me speaking for me. I miss some aspects of the game. Defense used to be a bigger deal. Speed used to be a bigger deal. And I think both of those are really fun parts of the game, really fun parts of the game. And now it's, those don't have as big an impact because the ball's not in play as much. So, you know, listen, but the analytics departments on the team, Scotty, as you know, they're paid to win games. They're not paid to make it, you know, fun. They're paid to win games, and the Rays know what they're doing.
The Mike Brosso at bat against the Aroldis Chapman, the about the 8 pitch of that 10 pitch at bat, I was on the edge of my seat. That's the first time in forever that I really wanted a guy to go deep, and he actually did it. What did you think of that at bat?
I thought it was phenomenal. So I'm calling the game, right? And obviously I'm familiar with the Chapman thing and I'm talking about it. And one of the things I've enjoyed this year is I've been on Tampa Bay, right, from the Jays to the Yankees to now. And obviously, you know, as you guys know, we know the Rays very well. America does not know the Rays very well. I've enjoyed the fact that I've been on a team where I feel like I'm adding a little bit something because of my familiarity with the team. So, you know, I tell the whole Brosso Chapman story as the at-bat starting and maybe into the first or second pitch. And I felt like at the beginning, Brosso was in trouble. He was overmatched at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And Chapman threw him a splitter. He's messing with the odd splitter. Threw him an 0-2 splitter that just missed. And Brosso was just hanging on for a while. And then remember Kevin, there was a down-and-in slider. And he wailed on it. He was out in front, but he wailed on it. And I went, oh. And then he got a fastball, and he fouled it straight back, like straight back. Mm-hmm. He was right on it. And I remember saying something like to Chris Singleton, who I'm working with, something like, Singy, he's getting there. Like, he's on him right now. Not that I thought he was going to hit a home run.
Yeah.
But the at-bat to me was fascinating pitch by pitch because Chapman was completely in control at the beginning and just couldn't put him away. And Brosso, this undrafted kid out of Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, like literally undrafted. You know, you talk about David and Goliath or slaying the dragon or whatever, you know, analogy you want to use. Unless you are a hardcore New York Yankees fan, that was an unbelievable baseball moment.
Did you see the Meadows home run coming earlier in the game off Cole? And the reason I ask, Dan, is it was noticeable in the bottom of the fourth inning that suddenly Garrett, he was still throwing hard, but he was getting way less swing and miss, and the home run came in the fifth.
Yeah, I don't remember thinking that. I remember how overpowering he was early. And, you know, Meadows is a guy who hit 33 home runs last year. He's just off an oblique injury, and he actually hasn't been a huge part of their success. He wasn't on the roster, as you know, against the Blue Jays, got on the roster against the Yankees. So, no, I won't claim that I saw that one coming. But the thing about the Rays, you know, to know the Rays, as you guys know, is when the number 9 hitter, Michael Perez, who plays once a week, gets 2 hits and drives in 3, you go, of course. when 12 guys get a save in the regular season, which is absurd in a 60-game season, and then Pete Fairbanks gets their first two saves in the playoffs, and he wasn't one of the 12 guys who got a save during the regular season, you go, oh, of course, it's the Rays, right? This is what the Rays are. It's almost like you need to go look for whatever the least likely thing you think is going to happen is, and that's how they're going to win a ball game. And I know Blue Jay fans have had, you know, excruciating losses down at the Trop, and I know I'm talking about a division rival. I understand that. I kind of have, like, two lives, right? I'm Blue Jay guy and I'm ESPN guy. And ESPN guy admires the Rays. And if you're just a baseball fan, they get more out of less than every team every single year, just ahead of Oakland, I think. And the way their roster is constructed for their circumstances is perfect, because every single night there are going to be three or four guys who can come off the bench and help you. And every single night there will be three or four guys who can come out of the bullpen and help you. And how they do it on $70 million, I don't know sometimes, but they really are quite something, what they've been able to do the last few years.
You got some work to do, Dan. We'll let you go. We'll thank you for this. Wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks. You too. Stay safe.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan Shulman calling game two and calling the entire series of the Rays and Astros for ESPN Radio. We'll tee up the Dodgers and Atlanta. Game one of the National League Championship Series coming up tonight, a game you can watch on Sportsnet. Kevin and I discuss coming up.
See, like, I feel like I'm in a really good rhythm right now, Kev.
Yeah.
Filling in for Jeff Blair.
Good.
I've gotten my Thanksgiving grievances about the Rays out of the way, and now we can focus on the NLCS.
Yeah.
I'm pro National League the rest of the way now. I'm putting my support behind the National League representative in the World Series. I'm just declaring that right now.
All right.
So we got the Dodgers, who I think are, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the 74th year in a row that they're going to try and do this?
Basically.
Oh, wait, it was only 32 years ago that Kirk Gibson hit the big home run.
Well, 17 and 18, they were in the World Series. 88 since the last time they won the World Series. Yeah, for me, the one thing that stands out, the platoon system they had in the last couple of times they've tried to make a run at this is non-existent now. You have a core who got you to this point. Why reinvent the wheel? And I think they've come to the realization that that doesn't work. Like, Cody Bellinger, even though he's struggling, you can't sit him because a lefty's throwing. So sorry, that's not going to happen.
Corey Seager, play him.
Exactly right. Here's my lineup. I'm going to run it out there. You know, you'll mix and match a little bit with who's catching and, you know, certain positions that you don't have everyday guys. That's obvious. But your core guys who got you there, I think they figured out that didn't work, and they're doing exactly what they should be doing. And Kenley Jansen and Clayton Kershaw are going to have to step up. I mean, let's be honest. Those two guys, what will Dave Roberts do with the back end of the bullpen? Will he go to Kenley and say, hey, the cutter is 88. I can't throw you here because 2, 3, and 4 is coming up in the lineup. I'll pitch you tomorrow. Today I can't do it. I have to go to somebody else. I'm sorry. Like, it's about winning the World Series. We're the Dodgers. You know, we have the best record in baseball. It ain't about anything other than winning the World Series. I don't care if they're 60 games. We know our past. We know what we've been through. We know what we haven't done, how long it's been since we haven't done it. It's time for us to win it, and I just think they're going to do that. I think they're going to say, you know, put feelings aside and put the best guy in the right position. And it looks like they've been doing that.
Well, the thing with Kenley Jansen, it's just a reminder, Kevin, of how unique Mariano Rivera was.
How about it? One pitch at 94 for however many years.
For 15 years or whatever it was. Because Kenley Jansen, for 2 or 3 years, was unhittable.
Now, he has had some health issues, which is, you know, some big deal, the heart issues. And, you know, that's nothing to poo-poo on, but it is the cutter. Realistically, the cutter's 88. Like, when it's 88, it gives me a chance to put barrel to it. That's what 88 does. 94, you have no chance. That's sawing your bat in two. That's the big difference. So that'll be the one little thing, the one little crutch for the Dodgers. Can they get past that? If their starter doesn't go deep, then what? Can offensively they make up for it? Can defensively they make up for it? You know, they do have two MVPs now with Betts added to the team, so that may help, but that'll be an interesting thing. And can Freddie Freeman step up? That's the one guy for the Braves.
For Atlanta.
He'll be the MVP probably in the National League, I'm assuming. He's my pick anyway. Can he do something? What is he? He is 3-for-18 with an RBI in the playoffs. The last 2 years, he's 7-for-38 with 2 RBIs. That's in 10 games. That's not good enough for me for an MVP.
I think it's a loss for Atlanta as well that Mike Soroka, and of course we knew this.
Yeah.
He tore his Achilles earlier in the season. He's done for the year, and he'll be done for a significant portion of next year as well as he recovers. But it's not just because he's Canadian, but he is the ace of that staff. And not having him, you know, the way that Fried pitched.
Yeah.
Against Cincinnati,
good.
Like Dave, if you had Soroka in that mix,
Cole Hamels was in there too. You imagine?
You could legitimately stare down that Dodgers rotation and feel pretty good, mano y mano.
The Braves wouldn't be the underdog,
right?
For me, they wouldn't anyway. If they had Cole Hamels and the Soroka, the Canadian, that for me again, offensively they're gonna have to do something. Their bullpen's good enough. The Braves are. You know, the Dodgers don't strike out a ton. Their defense for the Braves is gonna have to be good. Acuna Jr. is gonna have to, you know, punch first. First inning leading off, you're gonna have to punch first, that kind of thing. And again, I said it, I'll say it again. Freddie Freeman, where you at? Put your money where your mouth is. It's time to carry your team. If he does that, I think they can make a run at it. It'll at least go 6 or 7.
Yeah, I think. And again, the fact that there are no days off in both these series.
Yeah.
The fact that there are no days off changes everything because it affects how you use your pen. Can you go back-to-back days with certain guys, but you can't necessarily go back-to-back-to-back. So if you've used somebody in games 2 and 3 and there's a big moment in game 4 and he's the guy you want, you can't go to him. Like there'll be little things.
Yeah, the one thing to look at for the Dodgers, lefties. Dodgers against left-handed pitching don't like the breaking ball. They're hitting like 204 against lefty breaking ball. Max Fried's got a good one. Look for that tonight.
Happy Thanksgiving, sir.
You too, and everybody else listening. Be safe.
Have that turkey if you want. Otherwise, I don't know, have some ham or something. Have a wonderful rest of your holiday Monday, and enjoy the doubleheader of baseball playoffs. Baseball Central back tomorrow at 2 o'clock with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.